From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Nancy Cordes of CBS News, and this is On Point. So since arriving in Boston to guest host On Point, I have spoken to my kids on the phone four times, purchased their school supplies online, signed them up for swim lessons next week, and I keep checking to see if the name of my daughter's homeroom teacher has been posted yet. But there are still the 14 kid-related emails I haven't returned, the play dates I didn't get around to setting up, and the soccer uniforms I haven't ordered. And I feel crappy about all of it. I know I'm far from alone, but that doesn't always help. We all want the best for our kids, but at what cost to them and to us? Well, one psychologist is encouraging parents to take a step back and reassess, to care for their children by first being kind to themselves. And it's less work than you think. This hour on Point, the surprising results of parenting with self-compassion. Join us. Parents, what questions do you have about tending to your own well-being? Do you carve out enough time for yourself? Does that thought consume you with guilt? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. With me in studio is Susan Pollack, co-founder and senior teacher at the Center for Mindfulness and Compassion at Harvard Medical School, Cambridge Health Alliance. She is also a psychologist in private practice and, most importantly, the mother of two now adult children. Her new book is called Self-Compassion for Parents, Nurture Your Child by Caring for Yourself. And you can link to an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Susan, welcome to On Point.
Thank you so much for having me.
Save us. You know, the issue was really driven home to me, Susan, when I was preparing for this segment. And every time I would pick up your book to read it, I was consumed with guilt because I wasn't spending that time with my children. And so if I can't even read a book about self-compassion without feeling terrible about it, what hope is there?
Well, there's lots of hope because I want you to know you're not alone. In fact, I think we're all consumed by guilt, which is one of the reasons I wrote this book. It's tough for everyone. And one thing that you may find reassuring is that even Dr. Freud said that parenting was an impossible profession, which is why it seems so hard for everyone. We feel like we never get it right. We're never doing a good enough job.
You know, every generation tends to think that parenting is harder now than it used to be. But is it really? I mean, I have a feeling that my mother, who raised three children while running her own medical practice, might have a little something to say about that.
Well, you know, it's hard for everyone in different ways. Your mother didn't have to contend with the pressure of screens. She didn't have to contend with how to manage cyberbullying. I think the issues now are more complex than they were when your mother was parenting. She may have had a nuclear family around. You may have had extended relatives to help. Most of us now parent alone, and we feel very isolated and very alone.
It also seems like because there are so many options now, so many ways you can be enriching your children, either physically or mentally, it just means that there are more ways to get it wrong, more things that you aren't doing that you should be doing.
Exactly. And what we end up doing is thinking that somebody else someplace has it right. Do the French do it better? You know, do the Germans do it better? And there are these books that have really fed on our anxiety. I'd say, you know, the last decade, like Bringing Up Bebe, you know, where we're constantly looking over our shoulders and saying, are they doing it right? Are they doing it right? And what is important here is there isn't one right way to do it. So we don't need to relocate. One of the exciting things about bringing some kindness or compassion, mindfulness to parenting is we realize that the answers are within us. They're not on another continent. We don't have to move.
So when you talk about self-compassion, the first thing that comes to my mind is getting a massage or sleeping in or, you know, scheduling a date night or finally going for that run or something. But that's not exactly what you're talking about
here. Exactly. And thanks for raising that, because it's often misunderstood. So it's not a bubble bath. And because people equate it with massage or getting a mani and a pedi, they misunderstand and they think, oh, I feel too guilty if I put myself first. So it's not about putting yourself first. It's more just including yourself in the circle of care. So, you know, you're taking care of your kids. Often we're taking care of our parents. Sometimes we're taking care of our siblings. Often we're taking care of our partners. And it's a lot. And if we can just fold ourselves in, it makes it so much easier. So many of the parents I see in my practice will say, oh, gee, I haven't had time for a shower. I hope you don't mind, Susan. I haven't eaten. I'm exhausted. I'm not sleeping well. I'm overwhelmed. And if we can just stop and say, wait a minute, we deserve some care too. You know, we need sleep. We need food. It just makes it so much easier. And we feel less guilty and less exhausted and burned out.
So what other forms could that care take aside from the food and the shower?
Right. And the occasional massage as well.
Sure, sign me up.
Well, one of the things I really like to recommend is very short mindfulness meditation practices. And I know a number of weeks ago you had Jon Kabat-Zinn on the show, and he was really one of the first people to bring mindfulness meditation into the mainstream. But where this departs is John, who created a magnificent program on mindfulness-based stress reduction, MBSR, had people meditate for 45 minutes a day.
Wow.
And as a busy parent, oh, you know, we may want to. We don't have that time. And very few people have time to do an extended retreat. So what I've tried to do is come up with practices that really work for parents. Things you can do with just three breaths. Things you can do in 3 minutes. And it's hard to say, well, I don't have three breaths, because you're breathing anyway. So just ways you can incorporate it in the day. Even I just know that I've changed thousands of diapers in my day. In fact, the statistics are that with each child, we change 8,000 diapers. You know, so you can do the math if you have more than one child.
I've blocked it out.
Most people have. But for those people who are still changing diapers, it's nice to have a practice where you can be mindful while you're changing diapers, or mindful while you're folding the laundry or washing the dishes, because those diapers may be ancient history, but I'm sure you're still washing dishes.
And how does that help? Because you write in your book about the fact that you kind of have to talk some of your patients into it. They say, oh, I'm not into that new agey stuff. I'm not lighting incense and candles, you know, and sitting with my legs crossed and meditating. That's not for me, and I don't get it.
Yep. And I get that a lot. So a lot of people say, ooh, that's silly. That's gooey. I don't have the time for it. And then other people worry that it's going to turn their kids into wimps. Kristen Neff, who is the a major researcher on self-compassion, she's been doing the research since 2003, was profiled in the Times recently. And she thought, oh, this is great. And then the comments afterwards were, oh, yeah, just what we need, a nation of wimps. And that's not what it's about. It's not making us soft. It's not being incapable of setting limits. It's not saying, oh, darling, you don't have to go to school. Do you want to eat chocolate cake for breakfast and watch Netflix all day? No, it's not that at all.
What is it? So tell me what I would do in those three breaths that would somehow, you know, put me in a better frame of mind than I'm in right, you know, on a day-to-day basis, trying to do a job and take care of the kids and everything else.
Okay, great. So two responses. First, I'd love to guide you through those three breaths, because that's something we can all do. And you don't even need to have your eyes closed. You can do that if a kid is having a tantrum in the grocery store. But basically, the easiest way to understand it is to think, okay, now what would it be like if I'm having a really hard day? What would I say to a friend? Or what would my best friend say to me? I mean, for example, let's say your kid is having a tantrum, or your kid is fighting with you about putting on a sweater or boots, or you've just had a fight with your teenager, and your teenager says, I hate you. You know, those things are really hard for parents. So first you think, okay, you know, this is tough, but what would my best friend say to me? And hopefully the best friend would say, oh yeah, Nancy, that's tough.
Right. I want to get into that when we come back, because you talk a lot about the fact that we're much more compassionate with our friends who are going through challenges than we are with ourselves. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about the fact that we often compare ourselves to others and we never stack up. Susan Pollack, a psychologist and author of the new book, Self-Compassion for Parents. Thank you so much. We'll be right back. I'm Nancy Cordes. You're listening to On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I'm Nancy Cordes. This is On Point. We're discussing the benefits of parenting with self-compassion. And you can join the conversation. What questions do you have about becoming a happier and less combative parent? How much time do you take to care for yourself amidst the perpetual needs of your children? I'm here with Susan Pollack, author of the new book, Self-Compassion for Parents. Susan, first of all, sell me on why it's better for my kids if I am taking care of myself.
Well, let me speak from experience here, okay? So I know the times when I was really frazzled and stressed out and angry, I wasn't the best mother I could be. I was, you know, short-tempered, as my kids would joke. I would hit the roof. So the more I could do to stay within what psychologists call that zone of tolerance, which is where you're not too angry, but you're present and you're responsive. So responding, as the meditation teachers say, not reacting, I was a much better parent. And remember, sometimes I was so preoccupied that my kids would be talking to me. Let's say I'd be cooking dinner, thinking about someone else, thinking about something else. I'd be stirring dinner, and my daughter would say, Mom, you're not listening. And she was right. I wasn't really present. So let me try to sell you. Let me teach you a really quick practice you can do in 3 minutes or less called tending to yourself.
Okay. So you're stressed out. You've told the kids, you know, 17 times to take a shower and brush their teeth, and they haven't done it. And
right.
You've cooked dinner and you've done the homework, and, you know, all you want to do is get into bed yourself.
Right. And you've had it. You're
okay.
Fried.
Okay, got it.
So just sit comfortably, and you can do this either with your eyes open or closed. And just start by becoming present and aware. And that's really the definition of mindfulness. So know that you're sitting when you're sitting. And what you might like to do is just take a few breaths. Sometimes we're so stressed out that we don't even know we're breathing. And one thing that can be helpful is just maybe put a hand or two hands on your chest, just so you can experience the warmth of soothing touch. And you may want to say to yourself, oh, how do I know that I'm breathing? And then just feel the breath. And then just tuning in. Noticing the breath, letting the breath rock you, perhaps as you would rock a child. And then tuning in, perhaps saying to yourself, okay, what am I feeling? Noticing any sensations in your body. And then just giving yourself a moment or two to rest right now. And perhaps also saying to yourself, this is a chance for me to rest. I don't need to change any diapers right now. I don't need to cook dinner. I don't need to answer the email. I don't need to drive to soccer or baseball practice. Just let me be.
And how do you banish that voice in your head that's saying, oh my gosh, I'm not doing this right either?
Well, the nice way to sort of set that voice aside, because we can never totally banish what we call the critical voice, we can say, you know what? This is from one of my meditation teachers. There's no way to do this wrong. There's no way to fail at it. And that critical voice may say, what? But I can fail at everything, and I do. And you say, no. It's okay. Let it be.
We've got a lot of calls on the line for you, Susan. So I want to go to some of them. You've definitely hit on something that a lot of people are interested in. Georgia is on the line from Hamilton, Massachusetts. Hi, Georgia.
Hi, Georgia.
Hi. Thanks so much for doing this. I think this is an overdue conversation. I have three children myself in ages from like one to almost eight, and I am in it, man.
I hear you in it. It sounds like there's somebody in the background.
Yeah, I am. I'm in the car, zipping around, doing stuff. I have to say that one of the biggest pressures that I think generationally we're facing, at least for parents of younger children, is that we look up to the older parents around us, and many of whom I would say are more helicopter in their style of parenting. And I think that we are trying to strike a balance, many of us, and take a step back from that. And helicoptering, I think, is really the source of all this idea that we have to manage absolutely everything. It's not just our kids' schedules, and they are very, very busy and busier than they've ever been before, but just that everything has to be perfect. And it's a horrible pressure that we find ourselves facing. And I've managed over the past few years to really take a step back from that and look at that helicopter mentality for what it is, which is just a very stressful way of parenting. Mm-hmm. And I've become much more free range with my children, even the baby, just in terms of letting them take safe risks, letting them have time to themselves to explore, and not being just up in their business all of the time. And it's a huge relief.
Yeah,
and I see a lot of people really, really struggling with that balance. And they have these really unrealistic expectations. Like, you can't be working full time and being a PTA mom and doing the Boy Scouts and taking your kid to ballet and soccer and everything.
Absolutely.
You can't do it all.
Yes, absolutely. And I am with you, Georgia. And I can tell that you have the voice of an experienced parent. But let me respond to a few points here. And you raise some excellent points, which is we're all trying to be perfect, and it's really impossible. You know, it's so much easier to accept the fact that we try the best we can, but there are times when we're imperfect. And one of the tricks I really like that comes from mindfulness meditation is that we can always start again. So let's say one of those three kids in the car starts fighting, you lose it, you yell. Instead of beating yourself up for the rest of the day, you can just give yourself permission to start again. And I agree with you around the helicopter parents that that's not good. In fact, I don't know if you've heard of the newest incarnation, which is called the snowplow parent, which is the parent who tries to get rid of any obstacles in the child's way, rather than teaching the child, as someone who grew up in New England as well, how to manage and navigate the snow and the ice. And that's really a gift we can give our children, helping them deal with obstacles in a skillful way rather than totally clearing the road.
You know, Susan, you talk about comparing yourself to other people. And you mentioned, you brought up earlier Kristen Neff. She's a researcher in the field of mindful self-compassion. And she spoke last year about a fundamental dilemma that many of us face when comparing ourselves to others. Let's take a listen to what she had to say. We can talk about it.
The problem is we all have to be above average to feel good about ourselves. But what that means is self-esteem is predicated on a logical impossibility because we can't all be above average at the same time. So it sets up this really unhealthy dynamic where we are constantly comparing ourselves to others. You know, is that person better than me? Am I better than them? And that social comparison dynamic actually leads to some pretty nasty behavior.
Susan, you also write about this in your book. I really related to it. You talked about the comparison trap, that you're always comparing yourself to others. And as Kristen pointed out, you always feel like you need to be above average. But the problem is you aren't just comparing yourself to one mom who's good at one thing. You're comparing yourself to the parent who's the most hands-on. And how do you stack up to them? And the parent who's achieving the most at work. And how do you stack up to them? And the parent who's volunteering the most at school. And how do you stack up to them? And no one can embody all of these things at the same time. You're bound to lose.
Exactly. So thanks for playing the snippet from Kristen's TED Talk. Teddy Roosevelt has a quote that I love where he says that basically comparison is the killer of joy.
Wow.
And I think when we get into what the meditation teachers call comparing mind, we're bound to lose because, as Kristen says so well, you're never good enough. So how can you feel that you're doing the best you can? We're all human. We're all imperfect. And we don't have to be the best. In fact, there's another story that I love from the developmental psychologist Jean Piaget. And when he was developing his developmental theory, he would lecture around the country, and people would always raise their hand and say, well, how can we get our kids to do it bigger, better, faster? And he would respond and say, why would you want to do that? So I think the take-home message here is that it's not a race, and that if we begin to think it's a race and we have to be bigger, better, faster, number one all the time, it's just not going to work.
Right. We're all really good about teaching our kids that they shouldn't worry about who has a bigger house or a fancier car. But sometimes we're not as good about learning those lessons ourselves. Let's get another caller on the line now. Sebastian is in Shelby, North Carolina. Hi, Sebastian.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
The statement that I wanted to make is if you ignore your gas hand, your car's going to stop somewhere that you don't want to stop. And if you ignore what you need to keep going, you're going to stop too. It's going to show up as depression. And as far as being other people, everybody sucks at being someone else, right? But no one's ever been you. So we've got to ignore what societies are telling us and what they've always told us, that you're the mother, so everything is on you. Well, if there's 10 people in the house, everything shouldn't be on one person. Remember, healthy, happy you is better at everything than miserable you. And the smartest person in the world is the person that knows that they don't know everything about anything. Learn new things and apply those new things, and a whole new life will show up in your same old house.
Wonderful, Sebastian. Thank you so much. In fact, my very first opening story in the book is the story of Amy called Out of Gas. And it really illustrates exactly what you're saying. Amy wasn't eating, wasn't sleeping, dropped a kid off to school, was driving in a snowstorm, and then literally ran out of gas. And if we don't take care of ourselves, if we ignore the gas, not only will the car stop, we'll stop too. So it's a great metaphor. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and I liked what you said in the book about you are not your fault. Give yourself a break. You didn't order up the particular body that you're living in. You didn't order up your ethnicity or your personality style or your dysfunctional extended family. You have to give yourself a break.
Yeah. And self-compassion is really about giving yourself a break. It's about stopping the constant chatter of not good enough, not smart enough, and saying basically, yep, I didn't ask for these thoughts. I didn't ask for these parents. This is tough. Let me be kind to myself, and I am not my fault.
Let's go to Christian, who's on the line from Mineville, New York. Hi, Christian.
Yes, hello. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm a single father of four kids. I work a full-time job, and I see a lot of parents trying to be their kid's best friend instead of just being a parent. In my house, with my kids, I have two rules, respect and obedience, and it seems to work great. I just wondered what y'all's opinion was on parents trying to be their kid's best friend.
Well, Christian, I am so with you because there's a phrase from the Jungian psychologist Carl Jung, and what he says has really influenced me. And he says that the greatest burden a parent can put on their child is their unlived life. And often what's happening with parents who are trying to be their child's best friend is they're not really willing to set limits and be a parent. They want to, you know, they want to make friends with the child. They want to do things with the child. And they want the child to sort of meet unmet needs. So I think you've really hit on something that's very profound. And kids need parents.
But, you know, I have so many friends who say they set limits, but they're also much more affectionate with their children than their parents were with them. And so their child is so secure in the love of that parent that they know that they can stray and disobey because they know that parent is just so fond of them in a way that perhaps they weren't, as sure of that love and affection from their own parents.
Right. And just let me make an important distinction, which is there's nothing wrong with affection. But kids also need structure, and kids need rules, and kids need limits. One of the most profound things any of my mentors said to me, and I think my kids were in middle school at that point, is she said, you may not want to hear this now, but the most important thing you can do is help your children fend for themselves and survive without you. And I thought, whoa. At first, I thought my job was to, you know, just be loving and caring. And then I realized, no, there are skills that we really need to teach children as well. It's not all hugs and cuddles.
And you say a lot of parental anxiety centers around our own unlived lives, our own unrealized dreams that were wildly unrealistic to begin with and are no more realistic when it comes to our kids. But we have to let that go.
Yeah. And that's hard for parents because when they're dealing with their unlived dreams and their frustrations, they often project that onto the child. And then the child feels pressure.
Right. We're talking to Susan Pollock. She is the author of Self-Compassion for Parents, Nurturing Your Child by Caring for Yourself. You can join the conversation. How much time do you take to care for yourself amidst the perpetual needs of your children? I'm Nancy Cordes, and this is On Point. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
This is On Point. I'm Nancy Cordes of CBS News, and we're discussing how parents can use self-compassion to help both themselves and their children. You can join the conversation. What has most influenced your style of parenting? Have expectations for your children shaped your own sense of self-worth? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. And with us is Susan Pollock, author of the new book, Self-Compassion for Parents, Nurture Your Child by Caring for Yourself. And Susan, I want to read you this comment from a listener on Twitter. Rachel Goodspeed writes, I haven't had an issue taking care of me, nor do I feel guilty about it. The problem is the reaction from other parents chiding me for not putting my kids first. I always felt I could never be the parent I could be if I didn't take care of me and my relationship with their father. So how do you deal with that? Not the internal voices that tell you you're doing something wrong, but the external voices or the dirty looks.
That's a great question, because I get this from some parents as well. Like, I don't have any trouble parenting, and, you know, there are no issues here. And, you know, for example, I don't need a massage and I don't need bubble baths. And I say, great, no problem. You know, don't make it into a problem. If it's not a problem and you don't need more me time, that's fine. Because so often what you hear from people is, oh, I feel guilty for putting myself first. And so much of it really has to do with our temperament. And I think what's important here is knowing what you need and staying with your own North Star rather than being blown by the winds of what other parents think you should do.
Trusting your instincts. Lisa is on the line from Miami, Florida. Hi, Lisa.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
I wanted to go back about the children saying, I hate you in that angry moment. To me, I think a child has the right to have that anger. And of course, the words are cutting, I hate you. But the bottom line is, I feel the way to handle that is to look them straight in the face and say, it's okay if you hate me. But remember, I love you and I will always love you, and walk away. That gives them something to think about. I mean, for the most part, in my personal life with my children, they've ended up coming back later and saying they're sorry for even saying those words. I remember as a child, I loved telling my mother that because I got a rise out of her. And then I won. Whereas me looking my kids in the eye and telling them, that's all right, you can hate me, just remember, I still love you and always will, and walking away, I'm putting it in their hands and taking it away from myself.
Great. Thank you so much, Lisa. And that's a very wise response, because a lot of parents are thrown when the child expresses anger rather than saying, okay, anger is an emotion. We all have anger. And so many of us, when we were young, we would do that, as you put it, to get a rise out of our parents, and then our parents would respond, or we'd get hit, or we'd get a timeout, whatever. And your response is very wise, like, okay, yep, everyone gets angry, and I love you. So that's what we call responding rather than reacting. So
not taking it personally.
And not taking it personally, because, you know, the kid may just be in a bad mood about something, and the fact that they're coming back afterwards saying, Mommy, I didn't really mean that, is good. So thank you.
Let's go to MJ, who's on the line from Binghamton, New York. Hi, MJ.
Hi. So I was calling because I'm a single parent of a special needs, beautiful little girl. And I was just wondering how I would be able to justify taking personal time for myself when my daughter, everything about her, her hygiene, her needs, her happiness, everything revolves around me taking care of her. So how can I take away that time for her because she's not able to do it for herself and put it on myself when I'm able to express when I'm sad or frustrated or overwhelmed and she's not able to do so? How would I be able to justify taking that time away from her when she absolutely needs it? It's not something that she wants, but it's something that she needs.
MJ, that's a great question. Thanks for asking, because parents who have beautiful children with special needs often feel burdened. So one of the things I suggest is if you can have a circle of care of people who can support you, that is wonderful. Could be friends, could be family. And when your daughter's sleeping, perhaps you could take a little time for self-care. Because it sounds like you are incredibly devoted, but hopefully you get some downtime too.
You know, one of the things I think about all the time is that the first thing to go for me, everybody's different, when I'm overwhelmed and when I feel guilty about not spending as much time as I want with my kids is exercise. Even though I know that the more exercise I get, the more energy I'll have to do all the things with them that I want to do. Let's go to Harry. He's calling from New Orleans, Louisiana. Hi, Harry.
Hey, I'm so grateful to hear this conversation because I've worked with students as a learning specialist and educator from toddlers through college. And now my wife and I run a couple of Montessori schools in New Orleans. And the theme that we're talking about today is consistent throughout, no matter the family. And a couple tenets of Montessori are grace and courtesy. And as loving and caring adults, we're really good at, hopefully, at meeting the needs of our children. But we're not so good at extending ourselves that grace and courtesy. And a lot of times when students are feeling overwhelmed or if there's conflict, you know, grace and courtesy comes to mind. Why did someone do something? Let's have that discussion. And we know that students or children learn more from what they're observing from their parents and adults around them than anything we could put in front of them. And so if we're not treating ourselves with the grace and courtesy or providing ourselves with the day-to-day lifestyle that we want for our children, they're going to mimic the behavior that we have, and we want them to grow up with, you know, loving themselves and finding time for themselves. And so sometimes I think it's really easy to get caught up in, oh, I should do self-care and go to the gym or go to yoga or go do this. And maybe, you know, circumstances don't allow you to do those things, and those things are great. But try looking inward first and looking at your child and thinking, how do I want them to grow up and treat themselves and be happy with themselves? And maybe I'll start trying, you know, little baby steps doing that myself, to me.
Thank you, Harry. That was just beautifully put and a great reminder to extend that grace and courtesy to yourself. And what I would say is I would just add and. So could there be a way that you extend the grace and courtesy and maybe find time for a run or yoga as well?
That's the, you know, that's the aspirational goal for all of us, isn't it? Bob is on the line from Portland, Maine. Hi, Bob.
Hi. I was just thinking that raising our kids, it seems looking back that giving, you know, trying to give our time and, you know, being there to listen and just making clear that there was unconditional love were the, I think, the three main things. Also, somebody mentioned before just allowing kids to, you know, to explore things. I remember our son, I think he was in the eighth grade, and there was a leaders, some kind of a leaders conference in D.C., and we sent him to that or let him go to that, and he came back and he met a girl that he really liked who lived in Houston, and she invited him down there, and he went on down there. And, you know, I always felt, and we didn't know her parents, and we, you know, we were just going on a little bit of faith, but I, you know, I always felt that, you know, that encouraging those kind of things with hopefully some, you know, some sense was, you know, that made me feel good that, you know, we were kind of expanding the kids' horizons.
You know, Bob, that is such a good point. And Susan, it reminds me that for all that we talk about getting kids off screens, the reality is that the parents are also on our screens. And we're home in the evenings after dinner. And as much as you try to set it aside, you're getting emails from work now at every hour of the evening, or, you know,
weekends.
It's calling to us the same way it calls to kids. And they notice, that you're not necessarily available to listen the way Bob talked about.
Yeah.
Sometimes, unless you are really intentional about it, too.
Mm-hmm. So let me respond to both points. So, Bob, I loved your comment about taking time to listen, really love your kids, and also allowing them to explore. And really, what you spoke about was taking a risk. I mean, letting your child go someplace, visit someone you don't know. And Nancy's point is so well taken, because people are finding, in fact, so many of my patients and friends, finding one of the hardest things to do is set limits around screen time. Because if we think about it, we can't really self-regulate either. We're constantly on our devices and constantly feeling stressed, and our kids can't either. So just trying to find some sort of balance between family time, talking, conversation, having playtime, and responding to work concerns is hard. It's really hard and challenging. And one of the things I suggest is that parents really find time to be with their kids without a device. And that can be very difficult for parents. And the new research is fascinating, which is that our devices are designed to make us anxious and depressed for another dopamine hit.
That makes sense.
So, and there's actually Judson Brewer has some wonderful work about this, but people become addicted to their screens. And a lot of the screens now have been designed by people who engineer the slot machines in Vegas, so they know how the brain responds.
And how many of your patients tell you that one of the main causes of their anxiety, even when they've got younger kids, is looking ahead to college and being worried about how their kid is going to stand out and get in now that it's so much more difficult to get into these schools?
That's a huge anxiety. And if we look at the news, we see the admissions scandal, you know, and people are so anxious about having their kids make it that they will do all sorts of things that are unethical so their kids can have an advantage rather than put their needs aside and let their kids be who they are and do what they want to do.
Taking it to extremes. We've got time for one more caller, so I want to go to Marianne. She's in Martinsburg, West Virginia. Hi, Marianne.
Hi. A sanity saver for me was I put my daughter in ballet when she was five, and I danced when I was younger, and it was a big studio with multiple classes going on. at one time. I decided that when she was in class, I would be taking a more advanced class. And the best thing about ballet, for me anyhow, is that when you're in class, the rest of your life doesn't exist. So it's, you know, an hour of not thinking about the laundry or the cleaning or the stressful job I had. And it was wonderful.
Marian, what a great story. So you found a way to tend to yourself and get the exercise you needed while your daughter could do something that she loved, and then also it was something you could share. So thanks for that inspiring story.
Oh, that's a great idea. Finding something that sort of takes you out of yourself for a moment is the goal.
And connects you with your child in such a positive way.
You know, that would have worked for me if my four-year-old, but you know, back then when she was taking ballet, would have been okay with me leaving the room. But, you know, if I, you know, even drifted, she was crying.
Yeah.
So.
Well, so much depends on the age of the kid and the kid's temperament.
Exactly. So when we're talking in the couple minutes that we have left, if you could leave parents with one thought, one way to give themselves a break, one thing to let go of that we're carrying around, what would it be?
Well, let me teach you what we call a self-compassion break, and I can do this in a minute. And it really embodies so many of the principles we're talking about. So basically, let's say you've had a hard day. So just stopping, saying to yourself, whoa, okay, this is a difficult moment, taking a breath, perhaps putting a hand on your heart, and then moving to the fact that this isn't personal. So many other parents have had similar problems. So it's what the researcher Kristen Neff calls common humanity. And then responding just with a little kindness, the way your friend would respond and say, yeah, this is difficult. I'm not alone. Many other parents do this. Let me be kind to myself. And for some people, that can even be too much. And then you can tweak the language and you can say, yeah, okay, let me just be with that. Let me feel that. It will pass. So I would love to leave you all with the self-compassion break, and you can language it any way that works for you.
Thank you so much for the practical advice. Thank you for teaching us how to let some of this stress go. Susan Pollack, co-founder and senior teacher at the Center for Mindfulness and Compassion at Harvard Medical School and author of Self-Compassion for Parents, Nurture Your Child by Caring for Yourself. It was so great to have you with us today.
Thank you so much. It was great to be here, and thanks for your calls and questions.
And you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. And you can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Nancy Cordes. This is On Point.